Honey, it's our favorite time of year, and I got you something to celebrate.
A McRib! It's just what I wanted!
Happy McRib season, sweetie.
Mm, I love you.
I love you, too.
Mm. Actually, I was talking to my McRib.
Oh, okay, well, I'll leave you two alone.
Right now, enjoy a McRib meal and get another tasty McRib sandwich for just a dollar. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.
Napa Know How.
Just in time for the holidays, select Craftsman tools are now available at Napa. Celebrate with a Craftsman 20-volt cordless impact wrench kit for just $149.99. It's the perfect gift for everyone in your list, even you. So get great savings on select Craftsman tools, now available at your local Napa store. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa Know How.
Napa Know How.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores, while supplies last. Offer ends 12/31/19.
The Winamp is off and everything is good. This is Michael Angley on Discovery Paranormal, and I have Robbie Thomas's book in my hand right now. Psychic medium Robbie Thomas, the guy that goes out and helps law enforcement find bodies and solve crimes and all that. He's going to be on the show January 21st. So this is my Christmas reading, man, and I am psyched. Also, Peter Kanellis' book. I had Pete on the show a couple of shows ago with his sister and got his book in my hand. So I got a lot of paranormal reading going on, man, over the new year. I will tell you this. Tonight's show has to do with time. Time. Not really time, I guess, man. More about the block universe, you know? So there's a lot of scientists out there that are adopting the theory of a block universe. And we've talked about this on the show before, you know, just little bits of it here and there. And, you know, I had Augie Nast on. We always talk about time and we always go in that direction and we start talking about those things. But I figured a whole show to talk about the real theories of the block universe. And if we have time, I want to get into fourth dimensional space. And because it's fascinating, you know, fascinating stuff that is beyond our basic puny human brain concept, you know. So if we can explore and if we can think about it, maybe we can do it. Maybe we can work for those goals. I tend to think if you can think of something up, then you can work for those goals to create something. So think about this. Your birth is out there in time and space. It happened, right? If you listen to me anyway, it happened. Your death is also in time and space. It hasn't happened for you yet, but in the block universe, it already happened. So every moment of your life is out there somewhere in time and space. There are so many things that we don't know about space, about just the space within the space, the dimensions within the space, you know, and how time really is. I mean, we could do some little experiments with time. And the things that we've seen so far, you know, seems like gravity plays into it, certainly, right? But imagine the block universe. Imagine your hard drive on your computer, right? And in that hard drive, you have all your information. You have your memories, pictures, this, that, and stuff. You know, maybe you don't have future tense, but you have present, you have past. Right? And you could access that information, blip, 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 blip. Now imagine your life like that with no timeline. And, you know, without time, without that timeline, it would just be jumbled bits and you wouldn't really be able to experience it because there's no chronological order to it to experience, you know. There's no yesterday or tomorrow. There's not even a today. There's only the information within, right? So, To really be correct in theory, if you talk about a block universe, you have to include these timelines. Otherwise, it would just be a bunch of jumbled up information, you know. So the block universe model of our world. And according to the block universe theory, the universe is that giant block. And then we're inside that. And if you look at the timelines, I mean, there's all kinds of people online with their little drawings and doing all the cool little stuff, man. You know, and that's kind of basically it. But if there is a block universe, and it's not the entire universe, because if it was the entire universe, you know, how would it stack up against other blocks, because it can't be the only block on the block, right? And what's outside the block? Ah! So, how to build a time machine, you know? All right, how could this be? Now, block universe, you should be able to go back and forth in time. And if you could go back and forth in that timeline, you know, you'd be able to experience those things, right? Maybe without causality, maybe going back and doing things that aren't going to cause a ripple effect in the future. So, all right, a block has four dimensions, three spatial dimensions, right? You got length, height, and width, plus a fourth temporal dimension, or what we'll call time, all right? So let's make it easy. Let's visualize the block model of our world as a three-dimensional rectangle or cuboid. Remember, last week I talked about pyramids, right? So two of those cuboid dimensions, let's say height and width, represent two of the universe's three spatial dimensions. The third spatial dimension in the is left out, right? The length of the cuboid and take the length of the cuboid, replace it with time. At one end of the cuboid is the Big Bang, right? When all the things supposedly have begun. In Taoism, we say that the absolute, which is a reference to a god, the god, or that whatever energy, questioned itself, and boom, the Big Bang happened. It's kind of an interesting story. So, and at the other end is the very last moment of the universe. You know, maybe we call it the Big Crunch. You know what I mean? Because if you're going to have a Big Bang, you're going to have a Big Crunch, if I know anything about breakfast cereals, you know? So the cuboid is filled with every event that ever happened, you know? Anything, right? So where these events are in the cuboid represents their location in space-time. All events, including your birth and death at this very moment, and you read these words, exists somewhere in the block. This show, for instance, is forever out there in the block, man, you know? So, broadcasting forever. So in the block universe, time doesn't pass. It often seems as though where we are today and present and yesterday and the past and tomorrow is future. It also seems the present moment changes too. After all, tomorrow, it will seem as though tomorrow is present, and yesterday, it appeared as yesterday was present. So really, from our perspective, it appears that time flows or passes. But in the block universe model, time doesn't flow because we exist within the block. And that time frame, those timelines, exist within the block. So in other words, in a block universe, there's no specific present moment, and past and future moments are all relative. So think about the idea of here I am, I'm here, you know, like you go to a mall and it says you are here and then you are there, right? So you, while reading this, can or listening to this, can truly say, I am here, even though you are here, is a different time. So, you know, I really like, there's only a few scientists that I can really get into, like Carl Sagan. I love to read his stuff, you know. And he's local here to Ithaca, New York, passed away long before I even came to the area. I was friendly with his father-in-law, Harry. And we met at Cornell going to the science expos, you know, and then kind of seeing each other and ended up talking about, in fact, the very day that he and I had our first conversation was when the scientists had captured light and an atomic cloud and was able to move it from one place to the other, you know, which was amazing. So that was our conversation. We talked for like hours about that type of stuff, you know. And then, you know, his son-in-law, Carl Sagan, was an amazing theorist, right? And you can listen to him talk all day long about that type of theory. And I think if you work in those goals, if you can think of it, like I said before, you can make it happen. And then we're, you know, as primitive humans as we are, we're working for those goals. So now here we are. talking about block universe model. I mean, this would have been, I mean, you start bringing up thoughts like this back in a day and they like would, you know, push you off a cliff or something or put stones on you until you die, man. It was something that you weren't allowed to say. You know, when religion came into play, religion and science collided, even though they sort of rely on one another. And all the stuff in religion, all these stories, you can now link it up to science, you know. But the people that run those religions, the people that started those religions, the people that maintain those religions didn't want people being smart. They wanted people being dumb, you know, and they didn't want people to explore. They didn't want people to think about science. So science was a no-no. You know, science in some societies were punishable by death if you started getting into that type of stuff. So interesting. And, you know, about time itself, time within the block, right? So, all right. How about last week when you said to your friend who was arriving late for coffee, oh, now you're here, you know? Or, you know what? It's kind of like when you think about the things that you say, you know, when someone's here and you know what? I got this. All right. This is what's going through my brain. When I was driving across the country and I was in Arizona, right? I had crossed from New Mexico into Arizona and it's all flat, man. You know, through that whole corridor, you know, the whole, like that basic area in the Midwest, you just, big sky, all flat, freaking tumbleweeds and all that. Everything you think, what you will see movies about. You know, me, I was a kid from New York City. I had traveled abroad and done this stuff, but I had never driven across the country. And then I did so in 1990, right? So got a Trans Am, T-Tops, man. Got my music. I had my desert music. I had my, like, you know, southern music. I had it all. All right, I was ready, man. I'm cruising. And as I'm into New Mexico, and I think I was around the Holbrook area, and you start seeing like these mountains, you know, the Rocky Mountains, I guess, and it was more of like driving towards Flagstaff. And I was still about 9 hours away from this mountain at a good 75, 80 miles an hour, you know. I mean, like, think about the concept. You see it, you're cruising at a high rate of speed, but you're nowhere near it yet. And you know it's going to take you hours and hours and hours just to get there. 8 or 9 hours on the road just to get there. That's pretty cool. So in the timeline, as I was cruising, is different than the timeline of the mountain and the timeline of the planet and the timeline of, you know, if you talk about just even distance and how long it takes to get from point A to point B, it's interesting that we start thinking about time, you know, and how it affects us. So, all right. Time travel. Is it possible? A lot of people say no. Some people say yes. All right. So if time is just another dimension, a lot like the spatial dimensions, does that mean we can travel in time? So basically we do, like I said, it's going to take me hours to get to Flagstaff, man. You know, I'm traveling in time. I'm a time traveler. I can travel faster, but I can't control time. So that 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock type of thing, we can't control that. I can control how fast my car goes. I can control how fast I can get from point A to point B, or how slow I get from point A to point B, right? So if you think about time traveling, yes, we are all time travelers, right? But can we travel seriously in time? So things are a lot more complicated than just driving down the road, obviously, when you talk about time travel. And traveling time is clearly much more difficult than traveling in space. It might be very technologically costly, you know, the time travel, because things can get seriously screwed up if you believe in causality. So perhaps it's not really something that, practically speaking, we can do or should do, but people say it's certainly possible. So we already know that traveling very fast will result in time dilation. So we know it's possible to travel into the future just by traveling fast. Right. I was reading an article on physics.org the other day about traveling in space. And one person asked the question, if somebody travels in space at nearly the speed of light, and they're going wherever, and then they end up coming back, are they going to be differently aged than the people here on this planet? And then the short answer was yes, because in the Earth's gravity and this timeline, you're going to age faster than the person traveling through space, because the time to them won't seem like it passed as fast. For them, it's not. It's crazy, man. So if we can travel quite a way into the future, if we can travel at some reasonable percentage of the speed of light, right? And then Einstein's theory is that if you had some kind of craft that could achieve the speed of light, at the speed of light, everything stops. The theory is everything stops, you know? So then if everything stops, you wouldn't be able to burn any fuel or produce any fuel or even have, you know, anything, basically anything, because you would be stuck. You would be stuck, man. You're just stuck, right? So we also know that travel into the past, or we can assume or theorize anyway, that we can do that using wormholes, which are shortcuts through time and space. Ah, again. So on last week's show, we talked about pyramids and the energy within and how, you know, basically it's some type of engine or whatever. But with all that energy harnessed together, the people who were investigating this determined that the large chamber within became a harmonic 3D chamber. So I suspect if you can do something like that, you can create that localized wormhole type of thing, you know. But you know what? But there's a lot of buts, you know what I mean? Lots. Wormholes. And we watch sci-fi TV shows and movies about wormholes, and they're always zipping off to go somewhere and zipping off in that direction. Psh, psh, psh. Captain Kirk, he porked his way across the universe, man. Psh, psh, psh. He had a girl over here, a girl over there, and bah, 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 green one over there, boom. Man, didn't even catch one spacely STD, which doesn't even make any sense to me. But Captain Kirk knew one thing. He can get into his ship and go into warp drive, which is faster than the speed of light, and then zoom, you know? And then, you know, when they got into the newer series, they were wormholing all over the place, man. It wasn't just about warping. It was wormholing. You know what I mean? But where are you going to go? You go somewhere to explore. You go somewhere to build an outpost. What did humans do on this planet? They were in a large group cluster and then started, you know, things got a little crowded. In a little bit of elbow room, you want to get out to that big space to explore. Humans love to explore. We have exploration deep in our DNA. And then you explore, you go a little further out and make an outpost, and other people follow and they build. And you go further out and other people follow and they build. That's how it works, right? Now you can see civilization what it is. So if I travel time, I gain the past, does that causality? And then people say, no, that would create a contradiction. And there are contradictions, but maybe there are. I say all the time. You know what I mean? I think that's a manual. You know, passes because all the information is there and just not you yet. Which means really there's because it's all determined. And people like to think that they control their lives, they kind of really don't, you know, have a choice at best. You know, supposedly all the choices are choice. Just kind of lesser two evils sometimes, like with politics. You know what I mean? But everything is relative, and what is past to you will be future to someone else. So If I'm back in the past, I'm trying to do what is someone else's future. That means the past won't be in kind to the present. But what if one person can see someone else's future? Because certainly, actions today in the present change other people's futures. And you don't know where are options that make lousy choices, which is very rare. And that on the past. If you go into the past, it's your present. Your present is not present. And if you change things, you change things for at the same time. So I would have to the block. It's not show people if it makes the city out there and do lives. Right? Go out there and help you. So if you have that, your people are better, then that's your choice. Choose to do that. Or it's predetermined. They didn't even know. You automatically end up doing it. Sometimes people say they fall into proof. They didn't even know. Well, maybe they didn't know. Maybe they didn't know. You know, that was when we have an old saying that a tree doesn't have to try to grow. It does. You know, another, dump out a cup of water, going down the hill, the water's going to take its natural path. Natural path, right? So, now, nothing a time traveler does or can do, they're saying, is going to change anything in the block. Instead, what the time traveler does at any time makes that time and later times the way they are. So, all right. So that means that we know that something we tend to do in the past failed. We know that, you know, like I said before, Hitler rose to power in the 1930s. So we know that if our time future selves try to prevent this from happening, they fail. But that doesn't show. See, now I don't know, man. I'm gonna be on the fence about this until I can prove it, you know, if I ever can. I'm gonna be on the fence about this. Because if you're talking about present, I mean, I'm not talking about time traveling, like popping in a movie and watching a movie. I'm talking about if you can go to that time, if you can go right at that moment, that time, be around those people, touch your bone just like them, tell me that if you blew Hitler's brains out, you just popped in from a wormhole, blasted him good, popped out, like the day he tried getting in, or when he tried getting into art school. You go back and you let him in. You knock that teacher out, who rejected him, and you say, listen, teacher, I'm going to save millions of lives. I'm going to let this dude in art school, you know? And the guy will come in, little crazy eyes comes in, little crazy eyes ate off. All right, well, what do you got to paint for me? Oh, yeah, it's an apple. It's beautiful. You're in, man. You're hired. In fact, you're great. You know what I mean? Paint me a fruit bowl, you know? Then you got Hitler painting fruit bowls, and you don't have to worry about people being eliminated by all that rage and hate and ignorance. Ah, so maybe we can go back and change things or steer things in a certain direction. Would that change the future? Yeah, of course it would. They're saying it wouldn't. How could you not if it's all part of the block, you know? And they're saying it already happened. Obviously, there's no time travel at that point because you're talking about something. All right, whatever. You're talking about something that really we don't have a true concept of. But the block universe concept in theory, I hear a lot. A lot of people talking about it. So when Einstein unified space and time in his general theory of relativity in 1915. He did this work in 1950, and Nikola Tesla did stuff too, man. These were men of mind at the time, right? I don't think we have anybody, you know, maybe Tesla. Whatever, Nikola Tesla, all the work that he did. You know, they're saying like Elon Musk. I think Elon Musk is a genius, and I think he's a visionary. You know, maybe I think mediocrity gets in the way of stuff he has to do. But I see what he's doing with these rockets, SpaceX, and I see how they have a new soft dock system, and I like that. There's things that they're doing. They're streamlining the process. He is, you know. He's got Mars rockets, man, you know. I mean, that's pretty amazing that this guy went from one thing and all the way through. He went from, I think he or PayPal, whatever, you want one thing into this whole other dimension, right? I guess he was supposed to. It was predetermined that he did this, right? Or not, you know? Or it's just people applying themselves to their own science, right? So Einstein gave us a new way to picture the universe, right? So imagine a regular chunk of cement, you know, says Marina Cortez, a cosmologist from the Royal Observatory in Edinburgh. It has three dimensions, but we live in four dimensions. The three spatial dimensions plus one time dimension, right? A block universe is a four-dimensional block, but instead of being made of cement, it is made of space-time. And all of the space and time universe are there in the block, which block. You know what I mean? You can see this block, but I'm aware of it as we live. Well, I'm talking about it right now. As we live inside the cement of space-time, and we don't know how big the block universe we live in is. We don't know if space is infinite or not. But like a great teacher I had, Whalen, my Facebook man, said, how far does space go? And if you get to the end, what's on the other side? There you go. So we don't know whether as space has the beginning of everything, or it's just a constant loop. Maybe a lot of people think it's the loop theory, right? And dimensional energy. And that, you know, I've heard many scientists talk about every decision you make, there's another decision made at the same time, and you break off into different dimensions. I don't know if I believe in that either, right? I think that we just find our way, you know, and is it the luck of the draw? I don't know. You know, a block universe? I could get into the whole, like Elon Musk said, like his one of his theories is like this is a computer program type of thing, you know, like a Sims. I used to play the Sims for a short time anyway, back in the day. And, you build your community, you got your villages, you got your transportation systems, all that. People move in as you build, and then they have their little lives and they have kids. You build schools. It's kind of cool because it gives you the basic gist of how a society develops, right? And then major cataclysms will happen. You have to go in and save the day. And, you know, you need your first responders. You need to be able to repair and do all these things, right? So is it a Sims game? Are we just simulated? If so, what's that pain thing all about? You know, you think that they leave pain out. Somebody with a sick mind, right? I don't know, man. And the sorrow is that too. But there's also happiness, you know, and people can also be elated over things and whatever, man. I think that it's beyond a block universe at that point. But how about this? To get a sense of this block universe, we have to imagine stepping outside into an extra dimension so that we can imagine the whole block of space-time is right there in front of us. So you want to be outside the block, which they're saying is impossible. You get out of the block, and you can stand there, and you can see the block, right? Big bullion cube, yeah? So it might seem like science fiction, but let's imagine it, right? Let's just imagine, you know? Let's talk about it. Imagine that ants are living on the surface. All right. The poor ants can't go up. They can't go down there. They have always lived on the surface. They're not inside the block. They're walking around outside the block. You're in a block covered in ants, you know. So they can't imagine that there's something such as height because they can't move from that position, right? How about if one of them, perhaps by accident or by design, managed to build some sort of tower, or the ants just freaking stand on top of one another? Is that? I've seen that. Ants are pretty productive. And then they carry a bunch of stuff back and forth. But if they do, then all of a sudden, this previously unknown third dimension would open up to them to explore, right? So it's more or less the same for us. In cosmology, we frequently think of theories with a fifth dimension, you know, an extra spatial dimension. We could imagine devising an experiment that explores the possibility of some energy leaking into an extra spatial dimension. So, all right. I think that we need to get on to the fact that a lot of people think time is an illusion, which is interesting because without it, nothing would be organized. You know what I mean? It would just be bits and things everywhere. So if the future and the past are already encoded into the block universe we supposedly inhabit, how does that account for our human experience of life, our basically movement through time? From this block time perspective, time, as we experience in the block universe, is an illusion. It's not a real fundamental property of nature, right? So the ticking of time, our experience of time passing, is only because we are stuck inside the block universe, moving forward along the dimension of time. Ah, but if that was true, then time would exist for us. Maybe not outside the block, but definitely for us, right? The fact that we experience moving forward in the block, but not outside of it, comes from the fact that the block picture treats time as just another spatial dimension. And if we step outside of it, time is not pervasive. This leads to fundamental questions that cosmologists today are addressing in their theories describing the nature of our universe. In our universe, if our universe is like this block universe, then everything, past and future, all this stuff has happened, and our experience of time, I mean, like, you know what? The movie I'm going to watch tomorrow, I already saw it, man. It's kind of like that. It's just a mathematical artifact arising from the equation that's describing the universe. But then, why do we only experience moving forward in time? Why can't time flow backwards? What does this tell us about free will or if there's another theory to describe the universe that reinstates our intuitive certainty that there is something special about time. So imagine a fourth dimension, right? So now here's where we start to explore the unusual, right? If you're ready for it, man, if you're ready, try to imagine a fourth direction, right? Forget dimension. Let's talk direction. So, all right. We have no more option for expanding our hypercube in our three-dimensional world, as far as you know. But it can be done in the fourth dimension of space-time. And we call this a tesseract, right? So there are several ways of trying to illustrate this expansion, but they would be very difficult to explain. Instead, I'm going to say it like this. It's interesting to ponder the fourth dimension, and there are some good motion graphics you can find online on the web, you know, if you want to search to kind of get an idea, right? And Carl Sagan even said, I mean, you go on YouTube, and Carl Sagan's got plenty on fourth dimension videos and all that, that in our three-dimensional world, if there was a four-dimensional object and it was in front of us, we wouldn't be able to see it. We'd only be able to see its contact points in our three-dimensional world, right? Which is pretty interesting. So picture yourself looking down at a piece of paper, and imagine that piece of paper is home to a world existing only in two-dimensional space-time, right? Even though the second dimension exists within the third dimension, beings within this two-dimensional space-time would have no idea that you exist because they will have no comprehension of another direction of space, like politicians, you know what I mean? So they couldn't look up to see you because up is not a concept that they can fathom. It is easy for us to say that height, you know, because we experience height, but remember how difficult it was for you to think of that fourth direction, if you're trying to think of it. So if you poked your finger through their world, it would just appear as a flat disc with no height when viewed from the side. Also, if they were on the outside of the square with a dot inside, you could quite easily reach inside the square and pull out the dot. The two-dimensional beings would have no idea how the hell this was possible. So to them, you just somehow passed the only dimensional boundaries that they know of. So you'd be able to do this because the second dimension has a cross-section through our space. All right. I know that this is confusing, kind of, but it's not, because it's useful for imagining how being, you know, how a being that existed in the fourth dimension would appear to us. So we couldn't say quite for sure how they would appear because we don't have anything to compare it to because we've never seen these things. But I was once told that they would look like a bunch of skin blobs. You know what I mean? Skin blobs. The 4D creatures would be able to see everything in our three-dimensional space because they would exist outside our boundaries and would also be able to see inside any object, right? This would be gruesome, but you know what I mean? You know, something you may not want to see. But they would have the power to see inside your body and remove any one of your organs without ever having to penetrate your skin, just as you could remove the dot by pulling it into your dimension. They could do the same. So I don't know, man. You know, I don't know if we're going to encounter any 4D creatures anytime soon. But I think that if you're on the outside looking in, and then if you talk about a four dimension, you know, obviously, if there's four, there's going to be a five and a six and a seven. So this is dimensional energy, and this is the length of dimensional energy. You know, I like the movie Interstellar only because Matthew McConaughey's in it. It's worthwhile watching. The movie is so freaking long. I don't think that I don't think that I can handle ever watching it again. I like to watch movies over and over again sometimes, you know, some kind of movies that are just fun to watch. Tremors. Love it, man. All of them, basically. Yeah. And people are like, oh, you're watching Tremors again? You know, yeah. Yeah. I've been watching that since it came out. Love it, man. Friday with Ice Cube. I watched that Friday, next Friday. Friday after next. I can watch those. My holiday movies, man. I can watch those all day long. You know what? Because they're just fun to sit in on. It's not like I'm getting information from it, you know. But Interstellar is not one of those movies. It got weird because Matthew McConaughey goes out into space and he's got to go out and check out this black hole. And then, you know, a whole bunch of weirdness happens. You can watch it if you need to. But he ends up basically in the event horizon of a black hole, which is the first part before you go in, right? Now, in that event horizon, supposedly, the theory is these event horizons digitally record anything they encounter. But then after that, these objects get compacted down to the size of a pea or a flake of dust or whatever, and it's not going to be recognizable, but their essence is mathematically out there in that event horizon. So then he goes through this weird, trippy kind of thing. You know, I ever smoke a bunch of weed and listen to the Doors or Zeppelin, you know, trippy kind of. And then he's in this weird area with all these doors and windows and doors and more. And then he ends up like, you know, part of a book that has his daughter, because he leaves. And, you know, by the time this all happened, all the, like, his kid grew up and all these people are older and, you know, whatever, man. It's a crazy movie. But what I want to talk about is that digital recording is that number thing, you know. And it's like this. How come the pyramids are all pi r square, you know? And not just that, but the blocks they used. Something at some point, someone at some point decided that that was the best possible mathematical size. And it happens to be the only numbers that you can't equate. You know, you can't solve anyway, right? To solve for pi, no one's ever done it. You can solve for all the other numbers, but not pi. So if you think about that, it's sort of a key, you know, and you got to find that keyhole. And then talking about the pyramids and all the energy, it's funny, I did that show on pyramids, and then this whole week there was like a bunch of articles about pyramids, you know, about, you know, new theories and new findings. There's so many things that we just don't know that we need to figure out. And, you know, and we're doing it. You know, we're doing it. We are figuring things out. I think that for what we are as a species, we've come a long way and have a long way to go. And really soon, I think a lot of humans are going to learn about, maybe better learn about their origins. And I think that's going to change things for a lot of people. But you get into a lot of problems like belief, you know. What if all of a sudden you learn that civilization was a planned event and it wasn't like God and Jesus and all these people? And then, you know, there are religious people that are probably wigging out right now from me saying that, if you're religious, and you probably don't listen to the show as much. But the bottom line is it's more like you have to be open-minded and accepting, you know, and I think as time goes on, there's more offered to us, especially about, you know, about extraterrestrial type of thing. I mean, you've got Navy pilots chasing them down and having them on their radar and having pictures of these vessels that can drop from 80,000 feet and down under the ocean, on, you know, through the ocean floor and back and forth and whatever, and you're capable of speeds that we can't even dream of. That's not some black project from DARPA. That's not something. We don't have that technology, you know. So obviously, I kind of feel like this. I feel like there are shepherds in a way that are out there, and we are developing, right? And if you stand way back and you look at humanity, you know, as for what it is and how people are developing, it's damn scary, because there are so many negative influencers, you know. And when you just, you know, just flip around, try to be there. You know what I like to do with an even open mind, no opinion, nothing, and flip around these cable news channels and just listen for a few minutes to these persons. It sounds so primitive and it sounds so ugly. And you can just feel the hate and anger coming out of people and just the control and the agenda and all that. What kind of advanced civilization would really want any part of that? But it's more about what people need to learn for themselves, you know, and it's about evolution and understanding. So, you know, now where people are getting into robots, man, or AI, artificial intelligence. In fact, robot is going to turn into like a derogatory term, you know. I read all the time robot stories, AI stories, like, you know, there's a lot of robots that live at work in factories. And they kill people all the time. Every time I kind of see those articles, I'm like, another robot killed somebody. It's a huge liability area, man. You got these robots, and when they kill people, they're actually doing things they shouldn't be doing. It's not like they were designed to kill people, you know. But it's also like their job as a robot in that plant, when those people died, the robot wasn't doing what it was supposed to be doing. And I don't know whether they just wig out or whatever. And who the hell knows, man? Or the robots got, you know, got a problem with that person. Maybe they got on their nerves. They don't like them. I don't know. I see it happening, though. But as people, it seems like people are morphing into machines. And the more, you know, I see they're inventing all kinds of stuff. Or even like, Google has these contact lenses that have little computers built in, and it's like having your cell phone in your hand, but it's in your eyeballs, right? Stuff like that. Also, look at these sex dolls. I mean, I know men out there, that's their number one drive to invent a robot. You know, it's not about cooking and cleaning and doing yard work. It's about, you know, sex robot. And it's kind of funny how primitive people are even thinking like that. I need to satisfy my penis with a sex robot, you know. And then you see, like, if there's 10 stories about a male sex robot, there'll be one story about a female sex robot. And women are like, woohoo, it's a robot. And then, you know, all these other guys are like, oh, I can't wait to get my robot. Is that what really life is reduced to? You know what I mean? Robots, sex robots. And then you see these brothels out in Nevada, where people going in requesting the robot over the girl, you know. So it's weird. The whole thing is weird. The whole prostitution thing is weird. The whole thing, humans are very primitive, and we're going to have to go long and far to get away from that. And it doesn't seem like we are. It seems like look at, you know, Islam, religions like that are growing, getting bigger. And it's not weird to think that one day the planet could be very much an Islamic world, you know, as time goes on and people live and die and whatever, and they choose their religions. It's a big religion, a growing religion. You know, Christianity is kind of a dying religion, you know. So, and then Judaism is what it is, man. I think that people are stuck in their primitive thoughts and ideas. And instead of focusing on helping each other, I mentioned pain before. How about we help people get out of pain? How about we help people live better lives? How about we help people not live in poverty? You know, how about we help really each other as neighbors and as people, members of communities, and also inhabitants of the earth, right? Because we got to be all together if we're going to evolve, you know? And it's also going to be about necessity, things that we're going to need in the future. So I think that all this talk about block universe is very interesting. I love theories, man. I love hearing theories. And the ones that are plausible, I think dimensional energy, that works. I know people disappear in front of other people. And, you know, I mentioned on a previous show that there was this guy recently just skiing down White Mountain. White Mountains, upstate New York. He went missing. His friends saw the guy go to the top of the mountain to go ski. He rode the thing up there. And then they're waiting for him to come down. So his friends, This guy's a firefighter from Toronto. No history of mental illness, no episodes, no breakdowns, no nothing. Family guy, wife, kids, the whole bit. He goes up there to come down. His friends are waiting at the base of the mountain for the guy to do his run and come down. And then he never did. And then they're like, what the hell happened, right? So then there was a manhunt. I remember, I mean, I live a few hours away from there. So there was a manhunt. It's all over the media. This guy's missing. They had his picture and whatever. Days later, a few days later, they find the guy out in California, still wearing his ski gear, still with his goggles on his face and his ski mask, I mean, his ski hat, all of his ski stuff. He left his wallet, all of his info back with his gear on the mountain up in New York. And this guy ends up in California. Boom. So something happened. And then they, you know, they asked all the truck drivers, did he see this guy at the truck stops or whatever? The guy didn't remember anything, didn't know how he got there, nothing. So I believe there is dimensional energy, and I believe that people do, can enter dimensions, or even things can come out of those dimensions. Who the hell knows, man? It's just interesting to think about. Maybe on the next show we'll talk about that. As for me, on this show on Discovery Paranormal, I hope you enjoyed yourselves talking about the Blocker Universe. I will see you guys next week on this here show on United Public Radio Network, UPRNTalkRadio.com, 107.5 New Orleans, 104.7 in Past Christian, saying...
This is Matt Siraj, fourth generation owner of Community Coffee. My great-grandfather named it Community just out of appreciation and respect for his friends and neighbors. And for 100 years, our family has been about two things, great tasting coffee and great people. And as America's number one family-owned retail coffee brand, we believe it's our responsibility to continue to give them the best tasting coffee experience possible. And it's why we're excited for you to discover your new favorite blend. Look for Community Coffee at a store near you.
Honey, it's our favorite time of year, and I got you something to celebrate.
A McRib! It's just what I wanted!
Happy McRib season, sweetie.
Mm, I love you.
I love you, too.
Mm. Actually, I was talking to my McRib.
Oh, okay, well, I'll leave you two alone.
Right now, enjoy a McRib meal and get another tasty McRib sandwich for just a dollar. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.